Hi, I'm Hal Linden, and you're listening to Life Minute.
At 93 years young, with an incredible career that spanned more than 65 years, the amazing Hal Linden shows no signs of slowing down. We were fortunate to have him stop by the Life Minute studios recently after giving us a little tour of the city he grew up in and the one that catapulted him to fame, playing the iconic New York City Police Precinct Captain Barney Miller. He started his career as a big band leader, horn player, and singer until the acting bug took hold. He made his Broadway debut at age 26. More than 67 years later, he was back again for a limited run alongside Mary Lou Henner in the comedy The Journals of Adam and Eve, which hopes to return this fall. This is a Life Minute with the legendary Hal Linden.
Hal Linden in the house at Life Minute. What an honor to have you. Thank you so much for coming.
In person.
And walking all over the streets of New York.
Yeah, it was nice though.
So you're in the city for the Journals of Adam and Eve.
Journals of Adam and Eve by Ed Weinberger.
Yep. Tell us about that.
The story you know, most people do know. But John Milton did Paradise Lost. He did the kind of poetic version of it, and Mark Twain did Eve's Diary, and then that's the kind of country, folksy version of it. And Harnack and Bach did The Apple Tree. That's kind of the musical version of it, which I was in, by the way, but I didn't play Adam. And this is a more contemporary, up-to-date version, following all the problems that Adam and Eve have, that man and woman have had ever since, the same, certainly more contemporary problems that we face and how Adam and Eve faced it. Maybe a cliche or two here, but then again, the first time it's said, it's not a cliche yet. And cliches tend to be true. Tiresome, but true. So I think the main difference between all those versions is that this is written by Ed Weinberger, who's a very funny man who knows funny. He's been writing jokes. He wrote jokes for Johnny Carson and for Mary Tyler Moore's show, and he co-created Taxi and The Cosby Show, although no one talks about that one anymore.
Yeah, it's getting great reviews. Yeah, people say they laugh, they cry, everything.
We do deal with Cain and Abel, and whether you like it or not, that's part of its story. So, yes, there's the sad part, but then again, there's the fact that they were together how many hundreds of years? According to the Bible, they were together, I think, 600 years, something like that. But the institution of man and woman as a marriage, they started it. So all of the ups and downs of those relationships over the years, we deal with from the stage of the Sheen Theater.
And also the creator, as you say, did Taxi as well.
Taxi.
Which brings us to Mary Lou Henner, your co-star.
Yes.
But it wasn't his doing, right? It was your doing.
Well, we did it originally just a trial thing one weekend in California with Sally Struthers. And Sally was not available for this engagement, so we sat down and I threw the name of Mary Lou Henner in, which he should have thrown in, but he didn't. But Mary Lou is doing it with us, and I suspect will be doing it with us into the future whenever we get a shot.
And you guys have great chemistry together. You've worked together before.
We worked together in Vegas on the show Chicago. She played Roxy, I played Billy. Yeah.
Great, 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 great.
You know, it's interesting. It's a small community. It really is. You do run into the same people. Well, I run into the same people. I've been running into the same people for a long time. There's always somebody you did a show with. There's always somebody from the past, yeah.
And this is not your first time on Broadway, of course. Your first performance, 1957, right?
Right. I got the job on a Saturday matinee. I went to the Schubert Theater, and Judy Holliday had to okay me to become the understudy to Sidney Chaplin, her leading man. I met with her, did a scene with her, and she okayed me. I went into rehearsal on Monday with the stage manager and a script. I had seen the show many times because I was going with a girl in the chorus. And so I second acted it 100 times to pick her up. And many, many times they'd come in early, and by then the ushers knew me. They let me stand in the back. I watched the whole show. So I saw the show many times. But I went into rehearsal on a Monday. On Saturday morning, the following Saturday morning, was our first understudy rehearsal. I was supposed to become an understudy. That means I would understudy the character that Sidney Chaplin played, but I would also be in the chorus. I had never been on Broadway before, never set a foot on a Broadway stage. That Saturday morning, first understudy rehearsal, all the understudies come together and you run the show playing those parts. In the middle of it, the stage manager came out and said, "You better keep going because you're on today, kid." And after 6 days, I made my Broadway debut in the leading role of a musical opposite Judy Holliday.
Amazing. And then there's several. And then you won a Tony for Rothschild.
That took a little while to get to. Unfortunately, I developed the reputation of being such a good standby that for a decade, I stood by for everybody. Because they would hire, a television star or a movie star, and then they'd say, "Oh, get Hal Linden to cover him." And then I was, so I made a living that way. I raised 4 kids on the Upper West Side of Manhattan doing that and doing everything else you could do in show business. I did backers auditions, I did jingles, I did voiceovers, I did demonstration records, everything you can do to make a living. And it kept me going until from 57 then. The Tony Award was 71, so that's, I'd put my time in.
You sure did. And then your big break, of course, Barney Miller.
Barney Miller was weird. Danny Arnold, who created Barney Miller, saw the show. He never came backstage. He never sent me a note. I didn't know he existed. But what year and a half later, they were planning a pilot for Barney Miller, and the in those days you could do it. The network, gives you a list of who they think should play which part. They have actors with good TV cues. Do you remember that term?
Yeah.
Yes. and they did that, and he was an individualist. He did his writing his own way, and he just said, no. I saw an actor on Broadway, and I'm going to use him. I think he'd be the... And that was it. I never auditioned for it. All I know is I got a call to come and do a pilot.
And the irony of it is that it's supposed to be filmed in New York. And
it's well, it's about New York. It's
right.
About New York cops. But he liked living in California, so we shot it in California. That brought me to California. I was seduced out west and... never came back.
Until now.
Until now.
What do you like better, film, TV, or Broadway?
Or concerts.
Or concerts,
I had a
yes.
major concert career for many years. I've just stopped doing it recently. That is the most asked question. And I used to say all of the above. And it was true. In films you get to try it again if you didn't like that take. Like, did I do another take? You work. You don't get that opportunity on the stage. You're live in front of an audience. But then again, an audience has a live theater has an audience. You get a reaction. Your existence depends on how that audience reacts. And doing concerts is even better because you're communicating with the audience directly. So I used to say all of the above, and then about 20 years ago, I realized the real truth of what I enjoy most, rehearsal. Now, why rehearsal? Acting is by definition an executive art form. I execute other people's creativity. It took an Ed Weinberger to create these characters for me to execute. The writer tells you what to say, and the director tells you basically how to say it, and if you have to stand someplace, the lighting guy tells you where to stand when you say it. So it's other people's creativity, except in rehearsal. when you have the opportunity to experiment, let me try this, see what happens here, how does this feel? And that element of creativity, I think, makes rehearsals what I look most forward to. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And do a lot of changes happen from rehearsal?
Always, yeah. Always. And it'll change when the cast changes, because the human beings that are playing these characters are different. They have different backgrounds, different histories, different experiences, different talents.
And you're also just in You People, the movie with Julia.
that was so funny.
Yeah. Movie. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Eddie Murphy, Jonah Hill. The first scene in that movie, I think, was just funnier. The trailer is hysterical.
Yes.
That coming out of your mouth. And you said something funny, too. Well, you didn't always want to be an actor. You were a professional musician.
I never was an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a professional musician from the age of 15. It was the end of World War II, and none of the musicians, the grown-up musicians, were home from the Army yet. So I got myself a summer job at the age of 15 as the band leader at a summer resort. I made myself boy singer. That started my singing career. And I was a musician right through high school, college, and into the Army. I never set foot on a stage until I was 24 years old. That's very late. Most people know they want to be in theater when they're teenagers, or tweens, you know. But I kind of tripped into the theater. But once I got into it, I never left. I put the horn away, actually. I wouldn't answer the phone when it came to job offers as a musician, because I just didn't want to get distracted from concentrating on the theater. And I really got caught up in theater. The concept of lyric, for instance. I mean, I knew all the pop tunes when I was a musician, but it never occurred to me to think about what the words were. But once you get into the theater, particularly the musical theater, the words are what drives the show, those lyrics. I suspect that that's really what made my career, was my concentration on that, because I had a nice voice. I still have a relatively nice voice, but it's nothing to write home about. It's, you know, but I was always really specific about the lyrics, because in theater, the lyrics is part of the show. That's what reveals the character. It's basically everything in a musical. So I suspect that was one of my strong points, let's put it this way, that got me ahead in the theater.
And when did you realize that you said, oh yeah, this is for me? Something seduced you.
In the Army, we had a piano player in the band who used to do the officers club on weekends and the service club and gigs like that, and he knew all my songs, all my keys, and he used to get borrowed by special services. There was the small unit that didn't have a resident piano player, but whenever they had to put on a show of any kind, they would borrow this piano player. And they did it a couple of times while I was there, and then one time he was borrowed again, and he turned to me and he said, you want to sing a song in the show? I'll have him borrow you too. I had not even thought about it. And let me tell you something. This is something that's bothered me for the rest of my life. He asked me. I didn't ask him. What if he didn't ask me? In any case, I went, I sang the song in the show, and then they asked me to do a couple of lines in the sketch. And coming to the very end of the sketch, and I got two lines or three lines at the end of the sketch, I said, all right, I'll try. I don't know. I'd never done that. But to this day, I can remember physically what it felt like walking, making an entrance onto the stage. First of all, I was not at all nervous, which surprised me. The first thing I realized was how warm it was. The lights, it was like, welcome to the stage, you know? I was going to a nice, warm, welcoming place. And then, of course, I said my first line and got a laugh. Very seductive. Say something that makes people laugh. That's the kind of power I like. And my discharge from the Army coincided with the end of the big band era. the end of that kind of music and the beginning of rock and roll. And beginning rock and roll was, I'll use the word simplistic. The big band era had reached a state of musical complexity and interest, and it was, you know, it was going beyond Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey. It was now sort of Finnegan and Stan Kenton and really exciting, complex jazz. And all of a sudden it was over, and we were now down to two chords. And so I said, I don't know, maybe I'll try this theater thing and see what happens. Look what happened.
Yep. Yeah. Perfect timing. Barney Miller, let's go back to that.
Anytime you want to go back to Barney.
What was your favorite? Was that one of your favorites?
Well, it was an interesting, it was an experience in television I've never had since, and I've done many, many television shows. We had a this producer who was, his name was Danny Arnold. I just want to say his name again because I'll be forever indebted to him in all my life. He was a perfectionist, if you will. He would change lines at the last minute, or we'd rehearse a whole show, but we didn't have the last scene because he was still working on it. So we did about three or four shows with audiences, the way a sitcom is normally done. And then all of a sudden we had a show where we didn't have the last scene. They had to cancel the audience because we couldn't do the whole show for them. We never had an audience again, which gave us the ability to, you know, we didn't have to perform it for that audience. We didn't have to, we could take our time and do each scene and take our time and think about it. So it was more like theater. It was more like a repertory company. We could work on a scene until we were happy, okay, that's the way the scene should look, and then we go on to the next scene. And that's the way we did the show, which is a rarity in television. Our shows are done, you know, piecemeal, and they're not done in order. They're done for the convenience of the production. Most sitcoms are done in front of audiences, so you bring it up to performance level, and you do it, and you have one or two shots at an audience, and then they maybe tinker with it. But here we were able to work on each scene and till we thought, we're now accomplishing that scene, let's do the next scene. Took us three and a half days to shoot a sitcom, or 2.5 days. But it was a very liberating experience from an actor's standpoint because he got to work on it. Again, rehearsal, plenty of rehearsal. Try this, try that.
Yeah. I think it's so funny that it took you to cross the country when you were a New Yorker and the show was based in New York.
Well, the show was about New York. Yeah. I tried like mad to say, why don't we shoot in New York? And Danny said, I don't like New York. It's more comfortable out here. I guess he was. He lived there. He didn't want to leave his family, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It was so funny. You were so funny in that. More comedy. I told you in the car, I always watched it with my dad. It was our thing. It always reminds me of him. It was his favorite show. So.
As I said, everyone who tells me about their experience with Barney Miller associates it with someone else. It was a bonding experience for everyone. I saw it with my grandparents. I watched it with my kids or my siblings. Billy Eckstein's daughter told me that they used to watch it. Billy and his wife would be in the bed. And the kids would be all over the bed or in front of the bed or something. They all watched it as a family. I'd say the name Billy Eckstein, he was a big name he was a terrific singer when I was a kid. So, you know, all kinds of people. It was a bonding experience.
Yeah. Amazing, iconic show. And I've said this a million times today. 93 or 94? You're 93, right? Or 94?
93.
Okay. What's your
That's
secret?
Enough. Don't make me 94 yet. Let me experience this year.
What's your secret?
Luck. Luck, I have to tell you. It wasn't as if I was a physical I never went to a gym.
Well, I don't know. We just walked about 3 miles.
I never watched my diet. I can't claim any of that. Look, my brother had my father's genes and I had my mother's genes. That's what happened. And my father lived to be 84. My brother lived to be almost 80. But I got my mother's genes and she died at 98. And I do not recall ever as a child seeing her sick in bed. So it's roll of the dice. I got good genes and so far so good.
Thank God.
Maybe I'll even make 94. I'll come back when I'm 94.
Yes,
okay.
Better.
All right, deal.
And every year after that. What would you something you'd say to your younger self?
I wish I had more discipline in my life. If there's one thing that I missed, I think I could have been even better and bigger and better at my trade. I could have been if I had more discipline. Although, if I had discipline, I probably would still be a musician. I probably would have spent my life in the first chair of a major symphony orchestra as a clarinet soloist. I was that good as a child, as a boy.
Why do you say discipline? What do you mean?
If I had discipline, I would have practiced more. There was a lot I had to learn, and I would have worked on it, and I think I would have stuck with it if I was disciplined. But I wasn't. I was interested in meeting girls. What did I tell you? I followed my hormones, and look where it took me.
You did all right. Like I said before, you did all right. And you've done a lot for the Jewish community, and you still do.
I am the representative, the celebrity representative, the spokesman for the Jewish National Fund. And I've been that for like 30 years now, or 28, something like that. And when you call to plant a tree in Israel, I answer the phone. Yes. You think it's easy? Yeah. Getting up every morning, flying to New York just to answer the phone? Anyway, I'm still involved with them and I still support them. It's tough nowadays. It's really depressing to think about what's going on there now. There are no easy answers. I can't. I don't have a peace plan in the back of my pocket now. I do think, I'll say this publicly, I think that there will never be peace in the Middle East until the Palestinian population has a stake. That is, that they have something to lose. They have not had anything to lose all these years, and I think that's been one of the problems between the two peoples. I think if people have a stake, a home, a business, a community, a country, they're less likely to blow up a yogurt shop. So I've been an advocate for a two-state solution right from the beginning. Hopefully it'll come to pass.
Yeah. Good. And what do you think of the current state of our country right now?
Scary, isn't it? Scary. I don't think it's really new. I don't think Donald Trump invented MAGA. I think it was already there, somewhere hidden. He discovered it or he released it. He recognized that it was there, give him that. But now it's out in the open, and I don't know that it'll ever go back. I don't know. That point of view was always there, but was never socially acceptable. It wasn't something you would say in public. But now they say it in public, and it's to be recognized. It's a point of view, but it has to be. We have to deal with it as a democracy, not as an autocracy.
What else? So we asked a legend here, sitting here. The city, the streets of New York City, I think we got that, how it's changed.
Well, it's always going to change. It's always going to change. You know, you walk through Times Square and it looks like a fairyland with all. I remember Times Square, you know, when you had the guy blowing smoke rings, remember that?
Yes.
Who remembers that? You know.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start to sound like the old guy, remember when I remember this. And I remember.
Far from that.
But I do remember a lot. And I do remember walking through Times Square and trying to avoid time, particularly on New Year's Eve. We would never go anywhere near Times Square. We'd rush off and take the bus on 8th Avenue up Broadway. With all your, it was always a meeting place because all the shows let out at approximately the same time, and you'd meet all your friends on that same bus, and that's where a lot of friendships developed. Yeah,
it must have been like shell shock going to L.A., right, from living here for all those years.
Yes, however, I must say L.A. is a lot easier to deal with. I mean, you don't have to walk 8 blocks because you can walk 8 blocks quicker than a cab will take you 8 blocks. Mm-hmm. And you get in your car and drive 8 blocks and there's a place to park. So it's a lot easier. It's just an easier place to survive. May not have the theater that New York has, although there is an active off-Broadway in L.A. now. It's come around. When I first went there, it was a wasteland dramatically. But now there's a lot going on, so but it's always nice to get back to a little jolt from New York. Wakes you up. You got to take care of yourself. You know, you got to think about, wait a minute, where am I going today, and how long is it going to take me to get there? You know,
it's probably a lot more stressful, I would imagine. How do you deal with stress? What are your tips for dealing with stress?
I face it. Whatever you have to do, you do, you know. I'm not very good under stress, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I do a lot of cursing and whatnot in private, but deal with it. I read. I do puzzles. I do a lot of puzzles because I think it keeps the mind going, you know. So I've always got something to do, you know.
What's your best life advice?
My best life advice? First of all, I would not deign to tell anybody how to live. It's tough enough. Find your own way. But be nice to people on the way. I can't tell you how many times I've lost my temper and said things, and I just feel like, what, you know. So I do a lot of apologizing. Just be a part of this life and don't step on anybody else's toes. There's plenty of room for everybody to walk. And don't give up. And don't give up. I will tell you my speech when I won my Tony Award, because that was what? I made my road. It was 15 years on Broadway. 15 years really plugging and working and not giving up. And that was the essence of my speech, that I dedicated the award actually to all the understudies, because I'd been a standby for so long. And I said to the understudies, keep the faith. It can happen, just keep working, and maybe it'll happen for you too.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.